For a moment the thought flitted through Merry's mind, "Where's Gandalf? Isn't he here? Could he not have saved the king and Eowyn?" But thereupon Eomer rode up in haste, and with him came the knights of the household that still lived and had now mastered their horses. They looked in wonder at the carcass of the fell beast that lay there, and their steeds would not go near. But Eomer leapt from the saddle, and grief and dismay fell upon him as he came to the king's side and stood there in silence. Then one of the knights took the king's banner from the hand of Guthlaf, the banner-bearer who lay dead, and he lifted it up. Slowly Théoden opened his eyes. Seeing the banner, he made a sign that it should be given to Eomer.
"Hail, King of the Mark," he said. "Ride now to victory. Bid Eowyn farewell." And so he died, and knew not that Eowyn lay near him. And those who stood by wept, crying, "Théoden King! Théoden King!" But Eomer said to them, "Mourn not overmuch. Mighty was the fallen. Meet was his ending. When his mound is raised, women then shall weep. War now calls us." Yet he himself wept as he spoke. "Let his knights remain here," he said, "and bear his body in honour from the field, lest the battle ride over it. Yea, and all these other of the king's men that lie here." And he looked at the slain, recalling their names. Then suddenly he beheld his sister Eowyn as she lay, and he knew her. He stood a moment as a man who is pierced in the midst of a cry by an arrow through the heart, and then his face went deathly white, and a cold fury rose in him, so that all speech failed him for a while. A fey mood took him.
"Eowyn! Eowyn!" he cried at last. "Eowyn, how come you here? What madness or devilry is this?"
"Death! Death! Death! Death take us all!"
Then, without taking counsel or waiting for the approach of the men of the city, he spurred headlong back to the front of the great host, and blew a horn, and cried aloud for the onset. Over the field rang his clear voice, calling, "Death! Ride! Ride to ruin and the world's ending!" And with that the host began to move. But the Rohirrim sang no more. "Death!" they cried with one voice loud and terrible, and gathering speed like a great tide, their battle swept about their fallen king and passed, roaring away southwards. And still Merry Ardoch the hobbit stood there blinking through his tears, and no one spoke to him. Indeed, none seemed to heed him. He brushed away the tears, and stooped to pick up the green shield that Eowyn had given him, and he slung it at his back. Then he looked for his sword that he had let fall. For even as he struck his blow, his arm was numbed, and now he could only use his left hand. And behold, there lay his weapon, but the blade was smoking like a dry branch that has been thrust in a fire, and as he watched it, it writhed and withered and was consumed. So passed the sword of the Barrow-downs, work of Westerness. But glad would he have been to know its fate, who wrought it slowly long ago in the North Kingdom when the Dúnedain were young, and chief among their foes was the dread realm of Angmar and its sorcerer king. No other blade, not though mightier hands had wielded it, would have dealt that foe a wound so bitter, cleaving the undead flesh, breaking the spell that knit his unseen sentinels to his will. Men now raised the king, and laying cloaks upon spear truncheons, they made shift to bear him away towards the city. And others lifted Eowyn gently up and bore her after him. But the men of the king's household they could not yet bring from the field, for seven of the king's knights had fallen there, and Deawine, their chief, was among them. So they laid them apart from their foes and the fell beast, and set spears about them. and afterwards, when all was over, men returned and made a fire there and burned the carcass of the beast. But for Snowmane they dug a grave and set up a stone upon which was carved in the tongues of Gondor and the mark, "Faithful servant, yet master's bane, Lightfoot's foal, swift Snowmane." Green and long grew the grass on Snowmane's how, but ever black and bare was the ground where the beast was burned. Now slowly and sadly Merry walked beside the bearers, and he gave no more heed to the battle. He was weary and full of pain, and trembled as with a chill. A great rain came out of the sea, and it seemed that all things wept for Théoden and Éowyn, quenching the fires in the city with grey tears. It was through a mist that presently he saw the van of the men of Gondor approaching. Imrahil, prince of Dol Amroth, rode up and drew rein before them. "What burden do you bear, men of Rohan?" he cried. "Théoden, king," they answered. "He is dead. But Éomer, king, now rides in the battle, he with a white crest in the wind." Then the prince went from his horse and knelt by the bier in honour of the king and his great onset, and he wept. And rising, he looked then on Éowyn and was amazed. "Surely here is a woman," he said. "Have even the women of the Rohirrim come to war in our need?" "Nay, one only," they answered. "The lady Éowyn is she, sister of Éomer, and we knew naught of her riding until this hour, and greatly we rue it." Then the prince, seeing her beauty, though her face was pale and cold, touched her hand as he bent to look more closely on her. "Men of Rohan," he cried, "are there no leeches among you? She is hurt, to the death maybe, but I deem that she yet lives." And he held the bright burnished vambrace that was upon his arm before her cold lips, and behold, a little mist was laid on it, hardly to be seen. "Haste is now needed," he said, and he sent one riding back swiftly to the city to bring aid. But he, bowing low to the fallen, bade them farewell, and mounting, rode away into battle. And now the fighting waxed furious on the fields of the Pelennor, and the din of arms rose upon high, with the crying of men and the neighing of horses. Horns were blown, and trumpets were braying, and the Mumakil were bellowing as they were goaded to war. Under the south walls of the city, the footmen of Gondor now drove against the legions of Morgul that were still gathered there in strength. But the horsemen rode eastward to the succour of Éomer. Húrin the Tall, Warden of the Keys, and the Lord of Las Anach, and Hirluin of the Green Hills, and Prince Imrahil the Fair, with his knights all about him. Not too soon came their aid to the Rohirrim, for fortune had turned against Éomer, and his fury had betrayed him. The great wrath of his onslaught had utterly overthrown the front of his enemies, and great wedges of his riders had passed clear through the ranks of the Southrons, discomfiting their horsemen and riding their footmen to ruin. But wherever the Mumakil came there, the horses would not go, but blenched and swerved away, and the great monsters were unfought, and stood like towers of defence, and the Haradrim rallied about them. And if the Rohirrim at their onset were thrice outnumbered by the Haradrim alone, soon their case became worse, for new strength came streaming to the field out of Osgiliath. There they had been mustered for the sack of the city and the rape of Gondor, waiting on the call of their captain. He now was destroyed, but Gothmog, the lieutenant of Morgul, had flung them into the fray. Easterlings with axes, and Variags of Khand, Southrons in scarlet, and out of far Harad, black men like half-trolls with white eyes and red tongues. Some now hastened up behind the Rohirrim, others held westward to hold off the forces of Gondor and prevent their joining with Rohan. It was even as the day thus began to turn against Gondor and their hope wavered, that a new cry went up in the city. It being then mid-morning, and a great wind blowing, and the rain flying north, and the sun shining. In that clear air watchmen on the walls saw afar a new sight of fear, and their last hope left them. For Anduin, from the bend at the Harlond, so flowed that from the city men could look down it lengthwise for some leagues, and the far-sighted could see any ships that approached. And looking thither they cried in dismay, for black against the glittering stream they beheld a fleet borne up on the wind, Dromunds, and ships of great draught with many oars, and with black sails bellying in the breeze. "The corsairs of Umbar!" men shouted. "The corsairs of Umbar! Look! The corsairs of Umbar are coming! So Belfalus is taken, and the Aethir, and Lebenin is gone. The corsairs are upon us. It is the last stroke of doom." And some without order, for none could be found to command them in the city, ran to the bells and told the alarm, and some blew the trumpets, sounding the retreat. "Back to the walls!" they cried. "Back to the walls! Come back to the city before all are overwhelmed!" But the wind that sped the ships blew all their clamour away. The Rohirrim indeed had no need of news or alarm. All too well they could see for themselves the black sails. For Eomer was now scarcely a mile from the Harlond, and a great press of his foes was between him and the haven there, while new foes came swirling behind, cutting him off from the prince. Now he looked to the river, and hope died in his heart, and the wind that he had blessed he now called accursed. But the hosts of Mordor were enheartened, and filled with a new lust and fury they came yelling to the onset. Stern now was Eomer's mood, and his mind clear again. He let blow the horns to rally all men to his banner that could come thither, for he thought to make a great shield-wall at the last, and stand, and fight there on foot till all fell, and do deeds of song on the fields of Pelennor, though no man should be left in the west to remember the last king of the Mark. So he rode to a green hillock, and there set his banner, and the white horse ran rippling in the wind. "Out of doubt, out of dark to the day's rising, I came singing in the sun, sword unsheathing. To hope's end I rode, and to heart's breaking, now for wrath, now for ruin and a red nightfall." These staves he spoke, yet he laughed as he said them, for once more lust of battle was on him, and he was still unscathed, and he was young, and he was king, the lord of a fell people. And lo, even as he laughed at despair, he looked out again on the black ships, and he lifted up his sword to defy them. And then wonder took him, and a great joy, and he cast his sword up in the sunlight, and sang as he caught it. And all eyes followed his gaze, and behold, upon the foremost ship a great standard broke, and the wind displayed it as she turned towards the Harlond. There flowered a white tree, and that was for Gondor. But seven stars were about it, and a high crown above it, the signs of Elendil that no lord had borne for years beyond count. And the stars flamed in the sunlight, for they were wrought of gems by Arwen, daughter of Elrond, and the crown was bright in the morning, for it was wrought of mithril and gold. Thus came Aragorn, son of Arathorn, Elessar, Isildur's heir, out to the paths of the dead, borne upon a wind from the sea to the kingdom of Gondor, and the mirth of the Rohirrim was a torrent of laughter and a flashing of swords, and the joy and wonder of the city was a music of trumpets and a ringing of bells. But the hosts of Mordor were seized with bewilderment, and a great wizardry it seemed to them that their own ship should be filled with their foes, and a black dread fell on them, knowing that the tides of fate had turned against them, and their doom was at hand. East rode the knights of Dol Amroth, driving the enemy before them. trollmen and variags and orcs that hated the sunlight. South strode Eomer, and men fled before his face, and they were caught between the hammer and the anvil. For now men leapt from the ships to the quays of the Harlond and swept north like a storm. There came Legolas, and Gimli wielding his axe, and Halbarad with a standard, and Eladan and Elrohir with stars on their brow, and the door-handed Dunedain, rangers of the north, leading a great valour of the folk of Lebennin and Lamedon and the fiefs of the south. But before all went Aragorn with a flame of the west, Anduril like a new fire kindled, Narsil reforged as deadly as of old, and upon his brow was the star of Elendil. And so at length Éomer and Aragorn met in the midst of the battle, and they leaned on their swords and looked on one another and were glad.
"Thus we meet again, though all the hosts of Mordor lay between us," said Aragorn. "Did I not say so at the Hornburg?"
"So you spoke," said Éomer, "but hope oft deceives, and I knew not then that you were a man foresighted. Yet twice blessed is help unlooked for, and never was a meeting of friends more joyful." And they clasped hand in hand.
"Nor indeed more timely," said Éomer. "You come none too soon, my friend. Much loss and sorrow has befallen us."
"Then let us avenge it ere we speak of it," said Aragorn, and they rode back to battle together.
Hard fighting and long labour they had still, for the Southrons were bold men and grim, and fierce in despair, and the Easterlings were strong and war-hardened and asked for no quarter. And so in this place and that, by burned homestead or barn, upon hillock or mound, under wall or on field, still they gathered and rallied and fought until the day wore away. Then the sun went at last behind Mindolwin, and filled all the sky with a great burning, so that the hills and the mountains were dyed as with blood. Fire glowed in the river, and the grass of the Pelennor lay red in the nightfall. And in that hour the great battle of the field of Gondor was over, and not one living foe was left within the circuit of the Ramas. All were slain save those who fled to die or to drown in the red foam of the river. Few ever came eastward to Morgul or Mordor, and to the land of the Haradrim came only a tale from far off, a rumour of the wrath and terror of Gondor. Aragorn and Éomer and Imrahil rode back towards the gate of the city, and they were now weary beyond joy or sorrow. These three were unscathed, for such was their fortune and the skill and might of their arms, and few indeed had dared to abide them or look on their faces in the hour of their wrath. But many others were hurt or maimed or dead upon the field. The axes hewed Forlong as he fought alone and unhorsed, and both Duelin of Morthond and his brother were trampled to death when they assailed the Mumakil, leading their bowmen close to shoot at the eyes of the monsters. Neither Heluin the Fair would return to Pinath Gelin, nor Grimbold to Grimslade, nor Halbarad to the Northlands, Dur-handed ranger. No few had fallen, renowned or nameless, captain or soldier. For it was a great battle, and the full count of it no tale has told. So long afterward a maker in Rohan said in his song of the mounds of Munberg,
"We heard of the horns in the hills ringing, the sword shining in the south kingdom, steeds went striding to the stoning land, as wind in the morning war was kindled. There Theoden fell, Thangling mighty, to his golden halls and green pastures in the northern fields, never returning, High Lord of the Host. Harding and Guthlaf, Dunhir and Deowyn, Doughty, Grimbold, Herefara, and Herobrand, Horn and Fastred, fought and fell there in a far country. In the mounds of Mondberg under mould they lie, with their league fellows, lords of Gondor. Neither Hirluin the fair to the hills by the sea, nor Furlong the old to the flowering vales, ever to Arnach, to his own country, returned in triumph, nor the tall bowmen, Derofin and Duilin, to their dark waters, meres of Morthond, under mountain shadows. Death in the morning, and at day's ending, lords took and lowly, long now they sleep. Under grass in Gondor, by the great river, grey now as tears, gleaming silver, red then it rolled, roaring water, foam dyed with blood, flamed at sunset.